working with my handheld.
Good evening. We're starting a new course tonight. It's Introduction to ICS 214. This is the first of two sections. And why this course? Looking at slide number two, it's to provide standardized material for course download and instruction. We're going to explain the purpose of using this standardized ICS 214 form, explain why accurate documentation on an incident is necessary, explain how to use the form, and provide opportunities to practice using the form before it actually is required in a real incident. So that is the why of the course. What we will learn during this course is some discussion about different versions of ICS 214, information required to start the form, entries required by individuals, and sections and units, and where to submit a 214 form. Okay, now the next slide, slide four, talks about maps. What is or are maps? And typically we think of maps as standing for minimal acceptable proficiency standards. But one of the things that Wayne emphasized in the original presentation was that how do we exactly, well, first of all, what does proficiency really mean? What's the yardstick by which we're being measured, and how do you do that measurement of proficiency? Proficiency is kind of a subjective term, and so the emphasis really is on, and the proper interpretation of maps is minimal acceptable performance standards, because performance can be documented, it can be objective. It is measurable, and it can be evaluated. Now we're going to move over, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time looking at one of the handouts on maps. And this is a document, it's, how many pages? 25 pages long. We're not going to read it word for word, but I do want to walk through looking together at this. And for the record, at the very beginning, when Wayne was teaching our class about a year ago, this is a document that impressed me very much about the VCN, the Volunteer Communications Network. Materials.
Is that a handout?
That's one of the handouts.
It's in tonight's handout.
Oh, I don't think I grabbed tonight's.
So there's one behind.
Oh, never mind.
Okay, so I've highlighted several different paragraphs, and I'm basically going to talk through it a little bit. Your handout is real small print. I hope you can read it. But in the executive summary, I find this document is a great tool for kind of reviewing a number of points that we've learned in prior courses. On page 3 of 25, under the executive summary, paragraph number 3, it says standards increase the anticipated predictability expected by all involved because they apply to all of those in the same profession, regardless of organizational affiliation or geographical location. Now that's significant for mutual aid. They are a way of life for emergency first responders, law, fire, hazmat, health, and emergency management. Both individually and organizationally, all share a common body of have no do criteria used to qualify them as responders. Standards are necessary to create and maintain a mutual aid capability within and across the operational area. So that's what we're talking about. Moving down, another reason that I chose this document, and I should have said this at the beginning, another reason I chose this document for this class is that in prior sessions there was some question whether we were making ICS more complicated. And I think that this document, number one, is a good review of why we are taking this class, or this series of classes, refreshers. And it also highlights the fact that just about everything that we've been doing for months, if not years, are already part of our minimum acceptable performance standard. But moving on, looking at the next to the last paragraph on page 3 of 25, it says, each version of ICS is adapted based on the specific resources and operations of the organization using it. And he talks about the Coast Guard and several other, and he talks about, and there is the HICS version, which is different from both fire and the Coast Guard. In your handout, there should be an example of the HICS ICS 214 form.
I thought you were providing that one, so I don't think my friend is that one.
Okay. It's on the website already, but at any rate, it's a good example of the use of a 214 form. It is slightly different format, but it collects the same information. And then lastly, it says, implementing the ICS within emergency communications more than simply using some standardized ICF forms. If it were that simple, emergency communicators would just download the forms from the internet and begin using them. But it isn't that simple. Okay, and then on page 4, it says, one of the largest challenges for amateur radio and for other emergency communicators designated as emergency volunteer responders is lack of standards. And so really what we're talking about is trying to standardize. And then the final paragraph says, developing an adapted version of the emergency communications begins with establishing a set of standards based on the resources used and the operations conducted by the emergency volunteer responder communicators and the purpose of our minimal accepted performance standards implementation guide, which is this document, is to begin the process of establishing common denominators across organizations. So now we'll jump forward to the introduction, and one of the paragraphs that popped out on page 7 of 25, the third paragraph up from the bottom, is fact remains, and we've seen this a number of times in the slides that Wayne provided. Fact remains, how you perform is how you will be evaluated. So it's our performance that will ultimately create either a positive or a negative level of anticipated predictability about emergency communications volunteers. Now moving on to page 8. Okay, the minimum acceptable performance standards. Just like a roadmap, this is the 5th paragraph down on page 8. Just like a roadmap, this implementation guide is an outline of how to get from point A to B. Using the same common denominators standards to be used by all who are interested in emergency communications and mutual aid. Point A is our current starting position, and point B is the ability to know and to be proficient. I would suggest you look at, under getting started, you can look at those first three paragraphs. It's a good review of the implementation of NIMS and ICS. But we want to move on. Let's move on now to page 11 of this roadmap that we're looking at. Wayne wrote in this document at the top of page 11, to implement the ICS, it's important to do three things. Number one, to identify resource requirements based on resource capability using a unique 4-digit code. Two, to make sure that all volunteer radio operators mobilized to an incident are identified quickly and easily. And three, only for pre-trained, pre-evaluated, and pre-approved volunteers to mobilize. So that there is where, remember, we talked just a few in the prior class about whether the restat was being used to identify trained individuals or not. Reading on, in order to accomplish these three goals, it was necessary to develop a system and or a process to select only pre-approved volunteer radio amateur operators. In order to accomplish all three, it was necessary to develop a system and or process to select only pre-approved volunteer radio operators based on identified incident needs to meet specific objectives. And then I found the third paragraph interesting. It says, ICS works. Now, I'm not talking about ZR ICS, but talking about the ICS that this is all based on. ICS works because only pre-qualified resources are mobilized to an assignment. This increases anticipated predictability. This increases the anticipated predictability. Each one will be able to meet mission objectives because they have the knowledge, training, and experience, the have, the know, the do, based on their past development, training, experience, and observed evaluations. Anybody have any thoughts about what we've read? Nope. Okay.
Challenging,
isn't it?
Especially in a volunteer organization.
So yes. Yeah. It's. We have a dichotomy a little bit, don't we? Because we've got varying degrees of interest. Look around at the number of people in the class here. Varying degrees of interest and commitment. As a training guy, I have to throw this question out. How do we capture and enlist those talented people in our group who have expertise we desperately need, like topics like ATV and so forth, digital modes, Winlink. How do we pull them in to this program? How do we get them to realize that they're important to us? They're part of the limbs of the tree. No ideas.
I think those are questions that you ask at the next meeting.
Yeah. Well, I guess here we go off on a tangent.
You want to know the answer, ask the people to put the answers for it and see what they want to say.
Yeah, I guess